Let's go to one of the best sources of information, Dan Murphy, a presentation of David L. Young of Dexter Realty. And I say source of information in particular to me. So I'm still figuring out this new show, Murph, Bic and the Boss. Do you have any tips of working with the boss or working with CMAQ that I should be aware of?
Oh, man. We worked rather seamlessly together. We always tried to put our work onto the other guy, like if we were feeling lazy. So you can offer money sometimes, like $5 or $10, we'll do it. It used to be like about $100 to actually host the show. $100, you host the show, but you can offer him money in bribes. I think that will work. But it makes it a little more difficult because then he's not in the actual studio with you. So you'd have to wire him that money and make sure it was accepted before you could actually get out of work.
What I'm most impressed with today is Murph. It's not Thursday, because if this is Thursday, Bic, there's no way he'd be here, because he'd have men's day somewhere playing golf, doing something, and telling Toronto he's efforting something. Like, oh, I'm just working on this thing. Murph and I invented the term effort.
The problem being though with the COVID stuff, that I can't really do that because, you know, they'll be like, we need you to go live at 3:30 or 5:30. So that makes it a little more difficult to get from the golf course. So it's, but you're right. Thursdays, usually, especially summertime, for sure, efforting, you know, Jordy Lyle from the Whitecaps or, you know, or from the 86ers at that time. You know, like these are the kind of things, working on features. And that got us through a couple summers, I think.
Hey, Murph, don't forget, I Predator Ridge. So you can do stuff from the golf course as well back in the day.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
I have so much to learn still. Here I am grinding away. Lo and behold, I didn't know efforting was a thing.
It's not for you, Bic. Not for you. Yeah.
You can't use that as a producer, because then you'll get fired. Because if you effort for too long and you actually never land anything, then the gig is up.
Dan Murphy joined us here with Bic and the Boss. So Tanner Pearson is the story du jour when it comes outside of the COVID issue for the Vancouver Canucks. Just I guess my question is, does this fit into the 2-year timeline plan we just recently heard from Jim Benning of, you know, their idea of when to contend? Does Tanner Pearson fit into that timeline at all for you?
I'm kind of on the same page as most people. It doesn't make sense on a couple of fronts. First off, I'm not sure why you would commit to money in term on, and I'm not, this is nothing against Tanner Pearson, on a player like Tanner Pearson at this point with a flat cap. First off, because you know there are tons of deals to be had right now in free agency with the current financial situation and the flat cap. I mean, you can find these guys for less money. I don't know who would – first off, we don't know what the deal would be or if it's a smokescreen to try and get some trade value out there. We don't know any of this. But let's say he's taking $3 million a year. Like, who's paying him $3 million a year on the open market for a term? I just don't think it would happen. So I don't think it makes sense, especially if you're saying you're going to be a real competitive team, not this season but next season. Well, he's a year older then. You know, I just don't think it makes sense, the player, to give him term and the money, especially in this day and age where you can find players much cheaper that can give you similar value on the ice.
Are you surprised, Murph, that this has kind of popped up as a conversation ahead of what, you know, lies ahead on probably two very important pieces in Pettersson and Hughes in their contract negotiations?
Yeah. Well, I think that's another thing. I think you really need to know where you stand with those two players. You've got Demko out of the way now, but you want to know what those what the numbers come in, years and dollars, with those two guys before you really commit to anything else. I know that Tanner Pearson on this team right now, as it's constructed, is a top six forward, right? He's a second line guy. I think we all realize that on a good team, he's probably a third line guy. On a really good team, he's maybe a fourth line guy. And so what's been kind of the problem with this team the last couple of years? Bloated contracts in the bottom six and dead money. And I just think that, maybe he gives you a good year next year. He had 18 goals last season. let's say he gets you 15, 16 to 20, and it's a great season. Like, but then what about the year after and the year after when you're now supposed to be a team competing? He's not a top six guy anymore. And all of a sudden you have another one of those contracts that, you know, for the last couple of years we've been saying has kind of been the Achilles heel of this team.
Dan Murphy joining us here on Bick and the Boss here on Sportsnet 650. You mentioned Demko as well there. I'm just curious because we went through an offseason of, hey, spending is limited. We can only do certain things unless it's an opportunity we can't turn down, like a Nate Schmidt. Between the Demko signing now recently and then this potential deal, is this an indication of, like, Jim Benning's status? Or are the taps turned on again to spend again? You know, what's your read in the situation of why these moves have come in the past 10 days?
Well, I think for sure one thing is that probably it's a look ahead to having fans back in the building for next season and maybe more of a normal season. I mean, the one thing before the pandemic was this ownership group was not shy to spend money. I mean, that's one thing that's clear. You can have your criticisms of them in many different areas, but spending was never one. Now, spending the right way, that's up to the GM. That hasn't always been the case. So I think that that's probably one indication that they're willing to spend the cap once again. And then, you know, I think the Demko deal is one thing, but I think that's a deal that, you know, whatever GM would make and ownership, that's probably an easy deal to sign off on. But certainly, if a Tanner Pearson deal gets done here, I think that might give you a glimpse into that maybe Benning is still going to be the guy. If this is the kind of deal that the ownership's going to sign off on, the one that Benning wants, then maybe we'll see him in the next season as well. But that's just, you know, pure speculation on my point.
When you look at where this hockey team is, Murph, and you see the cap crunch that they're under, and let's forget about Pearson for a second, but we mentioned the Hughes and Pettersson deal.
Mm-hmm.
How hard do you think that is to get done? Does it make it easier, but they're the same agency, harder? You know, we've heard conversation about bridge deals, which probably have to happen if they want to stay competitive. Like, what do you see that transpiring and how those conversations will play out over the next few months?
Well, I certainly, in my mind, I think it's got to be bridge deals. And I think that's probably, well, first off, it's something the team is likely going to need. But I think it's probably also something that players are probably going to want, because you'd think that any contract sign, if it's a long-term deal now, the money in the first couple of years, considering the, you know, what's happened with the pandemic, probably the real cash going out the door early is not going to be great. So they're probably not going to be getting the real money until third or fourth year when it ramps up. So if I'm a player like Pettersson or Hughes and that's the case, well, just give me a short-term deal, a bridge deal. I'll take the less money now anyway, the actual cash paid, and then I'll cash in when it's time. So that might be the thinking. I've always kind of find it weird, though, with the same agency. And maybe a conflict of interest is too strong, but if you're an agent for a player, wouldn't you be trying to bleed every last single dollar out of the organization for your guy? But when you have two players of this status trying to get paid at the same time, I just don't know how that can't work against each other. I don't know how they can leverage it together at this point. Maybe they can. Maybe one player is going to earn a little bit more and they can leverage against that player. But it's always just kind of seemed a little bit funny to me that the same agency is repping two players going into such important contracts in their careers.
Just a bit of breaking news here, Murph, on a couple of fronts. One, on the Canucks front, Nate Schmidt's the latest player on the COVID list. And also from the Leafs, for precautionary reasons, William Nylander will not play tonight versus Montreal as he has an exposure to a possible positive case. And that game is still slated to move forward as scheduled. Just your impression of what the Canucks are dealing with here. You know, they put out a statement today, and it just feels like, you know, we saw Ian McIntyre report yesterday that next week's games look like they've already been moved.
Mm-hmm.
Just your sense of when games may resume for Vancouver.
Well, I said on Monday, I thought probably 2 weeks from Monday, and I believe that's the 19th in a home game against the Leafs. I'll stick with that. Obviously, nothing's been said, and the league hasn't said in the Canucks, but to me, that seems like the proper timeline So I'll stick with look for games to resume that week, possibly that Monday, the Leafs game, and that's a home game. But, you know, I mean, how many guys were left? I mean, Schmidt's the latest guy. I mean, what is it, Ben, Miller, Besser? Well, we know Ben had it. So you got Miller and Besser left. Like, geez, and it's amazing to me, too, that, you know, it was last Wednesday when these guys last saw each other. And now we're still getting positive tests, as recent as yesterday. It's crazy that it's played out this way. But it's a scary situation. I'm glad the club released a statement for a little bit of transparency. I think that was important. But, man, no matter where when these games pick up again, I mean, how difficult is it going to be for these players? They had the bye week, so it's going to be close to a month. Will they have had two practices? I don't know, right? So you're hopping back into a game against a team, let's say it happens on Monday, that's pushing for top spot in the division, that's really ramping up, and you haven't played in close to a month. Your fitness is nowhere near where it has to be. Like, it just seems to me like this is going to be a real, real tall test, and not without a whole bunch of logistical problems. Not to mention just physical problems and mental problems to try to jump back in and play. I think this is a long road ahead for this organization.
Yeah, and handled greatly so far. We hope for the health and the safety of the players, the fast recovery as best they can. But yeah, crazy times indeed. Murph, before we let you go, I'd be remiss if I didn't get a little bit of Masters talk in. I know how much you enjoy watching golf and following golf. So, you know, how do you handicap the field this year, and what are you looking for at the Masters?
Well, first off, who I cheer for is always the Canadians and then Rory McIlroy. That's kind of who I cheer for. That's, and of course, there's other guys I wouldn't mind seeing win. And I think Corey Connors, like, even though putting has been his Achilles heel and you have to putt it well at Augusta, I think he's probably got a chance to finish well just because of how close he hits it, proximity to the hole. So I'll say I like Connors. But if I had to bet real money, probably Justin Thomas or John Rahm. He kind of probably feels like he's playing with house money, just had a baby. We always know that that seems to allow players to get freed up. So I'll go Justin Thomas, John Rahm second. And then if I had to pick dark horse, I know his putting, again, we have to putt around Augusta's got to be good. But I'll say Tommy Fleetwood. He's been playing well. He's such a good ball striker that would be my dark horse if I was betting.
Have you joined Dan Riccio's Masters pool yet?
I have not. I haven't.
Have you seen it online? And do you intend? No, it's really simple. Apparently, you just like click his tweet, and it takes you to a link, and you just pick eight golfers, and whoever has the best score over the weekend wins. But it's taken some effort on his part, and to be honest, all of our parts to get people to sign up for this.
Yeah, you know what? I probably won't, and that's nothing against Riccio. You can get in the queue and after I'm off here to talk about one of our cameramen, Mike Bradley. He's got a Grey Cup pool every year, and he brings in this big board. You fill it out, give money, and I don't think I've known one person who's won the money, so I'm always a little bit leery.
We will get into that story in just a minute, but I appreciate you giving us some time here, Murph. Enjoy the rest of your day, and enjoy the Masters.
Okay, boys. Take care. We'll chat soon.